Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
All right, open your hearts, loosen your butts. It's time for couples therapy.
Yeah, this podcast is Andy and Naomi's, where they can both laugh and hang with all their homies, talking excellent vacationing with brunches and cuddling, to messy situationships and conscious and coupling, from Netflix hookups to single them with some Hulu, text, sex, regrets, or feeling on your new Jubu. They gon' talk about it, yeah, you are invited, needing therapy, I guarantee, baby, we got it.
It's couples therapy.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Couples Therapy. My name is Naomi.
My name is Andy.
We're a real-life couple.
A real-life couple of comedians.
And on Couples Therapy, we answer a couple of different questions from a couple of different listeners.
Woo.
How are y'all feeling, Hetty?
Other side of 300.
Episode 301.
Naomi, I just had a third of a bag of Smart Pop, and I'm trying.
What are you trying, babe? What are you trying? You had a third of a bag.
It destroyed me.
It broke you. It broke you. Wow. The power
not the
of pop.
Sleeplessness. Not the crazy week we've had. The sleeplessness. But yeah. It's that Smart Pop.
Also, for the record, it was Skinny Pop, okay?
Oh, Skinny
Smart
Pop.
Smart Pop is like the white cheddar. Skinny Pop.
Sorry, I didn't realize.
So it doesn't have that flavor profile of a white cheddar.
I didn't realize.
We have to clarify for the listeners so they can paint a picture.
But listeners, I just wanted you to know where I am. But 300.
Woo!
That was great. That was
wonderful.
You guys,
how did it feel? The longest podcast episode ever. How did it feel to listen to it, to be a part of podcast history?
I got to say, it was really difficult to put together and edit because the audio software. So Comedy Bang Bang, for their 10th anniversary, they did a 10-hour podcast.
Oh, God.
And I'm like, how did they put this together? Because a 3.5-hour episode was really difficult to put together.
But you did it, Andy.
Listeners, I did it for you.
Andy did it for you.
What I sacrificed.
What he sacrificed.
For everyone.
The sleepless nights, the sanity.
What am I, my parents?
The things I put a roof over your head.
We sacrificed everything for you to study philosophy and then improv? Oh, boy.
Oh, my lord. You really got heavy so quickly, Andy.
Because I'm telling you, the sleeplessness and the Skinny Pop have done it to me.
Yeah.
It's been a week. It has been a week. You are working two jobs.
Your girl is working two jobs. We have resumed shooting season 4 of Mythic Quest.
And then happened on...
It was Tuesday, wasn't it?
Was that Tuesday?
I think it was Tuesday or Wednesday even, because it might have been like...
I think it was Wednesday.
It was Wednesday? Okay. So my call time was about 6 a.m., 6:15 in the morning. So, you know, your girl's got to wake up, get ready. So I'm up around 4:30, but...
And that's normal anyway. You are awake at 4:30.
Thank you. I was already up, but I was up and I was like, my eye itches. And I'm like kind of scratching at my eye. And then I was like, oh no, it feels like there's something in it. It feels like something's in it. What I thought was, I was like, maybe there's an eyelash in it. It just felt like something like where I was like, okay, let me get up. And I get up and I go to the bathroom so I can see what's going on. My eye is red as the planet Mars.
In fact, it looked like, remember when in Total Recall, when his eye is popping out as he's like, gasping for breath.
Yeah.
Looked kind of like that.
Yeah, it was like that. And it had like bumps all around it on the skin. So it was not a good look. And I was like, Jesus Christ, what's happening? Now, in general.
By the way, happy Easter, everyone.
He has risen. I was like, girl, if you risen, where the hell you at? Okay, I don't know. Okay, but I also will take this time to say the thing that I have been feeling for forever, which is like, what is Easter. It feels like this is the first year I've heard of Easter. Everybody is about Easter in a way that I feel like is insane to me, foreign to me.
Mabel even had, we took her to her oncologist appointment for her 6-month checkup. Still in remission, everyone.
Still in remission.
Still in remission. And basically, there, what they do, I think, is they basically check her out for about 2 minutes and then have a 30-minute photo shoot as if it's a Sears that also offers lumpectomies and biopsies.
Photo lab that also does chemotherapy.
Yeah. So they did a photo shoot with her in bunny ears and in a field of
like a little
diorama.
Exactly.
With like eggs and
fake grass.
Yeah, whatever that like Easter grass is in Easter baskets and things like that. So yeah. So if you go to at Black Dress Comedy or at Andy Beckerman on Instagram, you can see that picture.
You'll see Mabel dressed, but it's so funny because then they bring her out, you know, and the doctor talks to us on the phone. She's like, "Oh, her scans look good. She's looking good." And then when they bring her back out, the guy has like a little Polaroid photo, and then he gives you the hard copy, and then you also get an email digital. Okay, because they understand you need the memories in two options. You need a backup to the memory.
But this is the first. Yeah, everyone, because I think all of our friends had babies in the last year or two. And so now Easter's a thing for them.
Yeah, but like I also didn't know having babies meant you were suddenly Christian. That's the difference. Because I was like, I heard you say boo about a church, boo about a religious community, and now I'm up in here seeing Happy Easter. And I was like, just say it's a day I want to dress my child in a seersucker suit. Like, I would respect that and just be like, good excuse to put on this pastel ensemble. But I was like, Happy Easter. Anyway, that's just something I've been dealing with. It's really been throwing me. So back to my eyeball. So I wake up. So I said the eyeball was horrible. And now this wouldn't be the end of the world if I didn't have to.
If you weren't one of the leads of a TV show.
And didn't have to be wearing contact lenses with a camera in my face.
Because
I could move through the world, you know.
We came up with so many possibilities. Like, you're like, hey, okay, so you're going to go in and just. You know, this is crazy, but what if like what if Carol had an eye had pink eye from eating ass, had an eye patch, had, you know, we came up with so many so that you could go there. So it wasn't like, you know, every movie about a TV show or a movie being made, you know, they're always scrambling because there's last minute craziness.
Right.
And that's what I'm pictured in my head. So I'm like, what if you just go in with all of these possibilities?
Well, I was ready. Exactly. So I showed up to work on time. There was no like, I'm not coming in my eye, but I was just like, hey, so I can't put a contact lens in this eye. I can put it in the other eye, and I don't know if I'm going to look lazy-eyed, but I was very like, I'm here to work. It's just like, hey, I can't do this thing.
Right.
But again, this is like 6 a.m. So, you know, the ability to get answers took a while. But do you know, honey, I was at a eye doctor, I think by 9:30-ish.
Yeah, they looked at you and they're like, we can't film like this. You're going right to an eye doctor.
So took me to an eye doctor. The eye doctor, she literally was just like, did you get something in your eye? And I was like, no. And she's like, maybe it's allergies. Like, we still do not have an answer, but it cleared up enough. She flushed out my eye. She put numbing drops in my eye.
But before that, what did she say to you?
Oh, her insistence. So she was all like, did you sleep with your contacts in? And I was like, no, I don't sleep with contacts in. And she was like, are you sure you didn't sleep with your contacts in? I was like, I promise you. I was like, ma'am, I only wear contacts when I'm being paid. I tried to explain to her. I'm not somebody, because the whole thing, I'll go, can I, because I kind of came in there being like, hey, and the AD or whoever had already called this doctor, right? So they must know I'm there like through a production or because of a production, where I go, the issue we're having is I need to know if I can put in contact lenses. Is my eye damaged? Can it take a lens? Because when I attempt to put it in, it hurts with the fire of 1,000 suns. And so she takes a look. She's like, I see no scratch. I see no bite. I don't know. She goes, okay, I'm going to numb your eye. And then you're going to put in the contacts. And then you're going to
sit
here.
Are you sure you didn't sleep? And I'm like, how many times do I have to fucking say, I don't wear contacts if I'm not on set? I hate contacts.
I know. I was like, I don't wear them. And they're daily. So there's no sleeping because I'm trying to like stretch out the 2 weeks. It's like one and done.
Lady, this isn't fucking House, okay?
This isn't fucking House. Come on.
Okay? I don't need you to figure out some kind of medical mystery. I'm giving you the straight dope.
I give you the straight
dope. About my eye.
I'm not lying. I don't lie, okay?
I don't lie about my eye.
When I have to pay for you to help me, there's no incentive for me to lie to you.
Folks, if there's one thing you should know about Naomi, she doesn't lie about her eye, okay?
I don't lie about my eye.
I don't lie about my eye. Put that on a t-shirt.
And so basically she
A red eye on a t-shirt and it says, I don't lie about my eye.
Oh no, I saw it. And she numbed me up and then I put in the contacts and then she was like, I want you to sit here for 15 minutes. I want to see if anything happens. So while I was alone in the room, I get up and I go over to the computer where they've been filling in the chart. And I see that she wrote, patient claims not to have slept in contact lenses.
Claims.
I said, claims. I said, why the hell are you putting allegedly in my file? What the hell about me makes you think I'm a liar? I didn't appreciate that she put on the record claims. That she said, oh, this lady says. It's like, excuse me? We've just met. What is the implication here?
Claims.
Claims.
This liar.
This claims. Liar looked me in the face and had the audacity to say she didn't sleep in her contact lenses. I said, ma'am. So anyway, a bunch of numbing drops later and stuff. I was able to kind of do it. Really did. My eye felt like hell all day. But you know what? It got done. It got done. And when the show comes out, I will point out the episode. So you can see the professionalism. You can see me stepping the fuck up and fighting the urge to scratch my eyes out. And I'll point to every scene where I thought my eye was going to explode out of my head.
And folks.
And we'll see if that informs the performance.
We're recording this on Easter Sunday. And I'm happy to report Naomi's eye. Beautiful.
It's here.
No red. No bumps.
My eye is no red. And it's no in jelly. My head. Yeah, it was like jelly. It was gross, you guys. It was like popping off in a way that we were like, what's going on here? So anyway.
Here's my theory. I had dusted that afternoon. And I wonder if I knocked something loose from somewhere in the bedroom that got onto the bed.
And then that's my pillow theory. Got all dusty rose.
That's my theory. Even though I thought I had covered up your pillow. Before I started the dusting, but you know, things happen.
So I think I'm going to take this moment. If you enjoy this level of just chit-chatting, you might want to join the Patreon. Because if you go to patreon.com/couplestherapypod, for just $5 a month, you get 2 bonus episodes that are basically me and Andy on the couch as we are now, getting into it.
Telling stories, sometimes doing experimental episodes, answering advice questions specifically for the page. I'm going to do something,
Naomi. Spilling tea. Sometimes I spill tea. Also spilling tea. Behind the paywall, I spill tea.
I'm going to say this. The Max Fun Drive just ended. I really like the way that they did this. So I'm not going to do this every week. I'm just going to do this once a year.
Okay.
I'm going to say this. Uh-huh. Okay. The Patreon really helps support the show.
It does.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that we try to do is not take ads from companies that are monstrous. Okay. We love Acast because they will ask us beforehand. They will be like, hey, do you want to advertise with this company? And I will go and I will research that company. And if it turns out they are like, you know, an arms dealer, like right. Raytheon. If it's Raytheon, I'm just like, I don't have to do research for this. No, but like there's a lot of companies where I'll like delve into and I'll look up and I'll be like, oh, it turns out that this is actually a scam perpetrated by some Silicon Valley creep. Okay. Right. So no.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So the Patreon really helps us. Look, we would say no anyway, but it helps fill in the gaps when we say no to monstrous companies.
Right. It affords us the opportunity to have standards.
Yes.
And as you know, Andy was talking about putting together the 300th episode and how long that takes. That's Andy, honey. That's blood, sweat, and tears. But as you know, all these animals got cancers. So the money's got to come from somewhere. It's got to come from somewhere.
It's so true.
Okay? Literally Friday, Squee got chemo. Saturday, Mabel got her oncology. Checkup.
And Monday goes in for a dental appointment.
And you know, honey, they got to pull something, they charge by the tooth. So the point is, we do appreciate what you give.
3 vet appointments in 4 days.
We appreciate what you give.
Patreon.com/couplestherapypod.
Absolutely. So speaking of other things, if you are in the mood, if you are in town, May 8th, I will be doing a night of stand-up as part of the Netflix is a Joke Festival. May 8th, 10 p.m., Dynasty Typewriter. Now, 10 p.m., you may say, I know. It hurts me as much as it hurts you. But I will be wearing pajamas, and I suggest you do the same. Also, masks are required because you know your girl, okay? These are my values. So come through if you want to be cozy and safe. I'm going to have some openers. I'll announce those soon. But the point is, it's my Netflix festival show at Dynasty Typewriter here in LA, 10 p.m. I would love to see beautiful masks, supportive faces.
Pajamas.
Pajamas. I'm going to buy some pajamas, you guys. I'm going to go for something cute. Maybe a silk number? Should I be channeling TLC's Creep video? Or should I be, I mean, we're certainly not doing like a sleep dress a la, you know.
I don't know.
A candlestick and a nightcap.
I was thinking you should have a nightcap, a candlestick, and you should have whatever that face cream is that's in, you know, that like that is in every like sitcom from the 90s where they're going to bed.
A they green face mask.
Yeah, green face mask. They lotion up their elbows.
Maybe my retainer's in. We give it a real nighttime experience, but it'll be fun, you guys. So come through if you can on May 8th. Now let's get to our guest, Andy.
This is great.
This was so lovely. Again, this is someone who we met doing the pod.
I've been a fan of theirs for a while from the TV shows that they've been in.
Yes, and so this was a great time. We are talking to the one, the only Tyrell Jackson Williams, actor, rapper, singer. We love a multi-hyphenate in this house, all right? You know them from Brockmire, Party Down, Everybody Hates Chris. And you know what? This is a beautiful conversation. So without further ado,
roll it.
How are you doing today, darling? What are you feeling in your heart and soul?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm thankful. I'm grateful for the place that I'm in right now and the time that I have. That's what I'm feeling today.
Interesting.
Oh, okay. Someone's put together. Someone's present.
I was going to say.
Someone's grounded.
Is that actor speak or therapy speak?
Mm.
Like, do you know sometimes I talk to, I won't name the actor. I talked to a white actor in the middle of the civil rights remix in 2020.
Oh yeah.
And they use a lot of the same kind of, you know, I'm learning. They used also, I'm learning about my privilege, and I'm just like, you didn't know about it before this, but okay.
Yeah,
but so I'm curious where is this coming from?
It's a lot less pointed than that, I would say. I'm not, you know, it's not therapy speak. It's kind of like, you know, growing up and maturing speak. Just being like, you know, trying to. There's a lot of stuff to be grateful for. There's no reason to, you know, harp on negative.
Okay, well, Tyrell, you haven't met me.
I love to complain. Brand.
Now, listen, I'm a New Yorker. I love to complain.
Same.
Too.
Exactly.
See?
Exactly.
You see?
Yes.
That's what bonded us. That's our currency.
I know. I grew up in Harlem, and I feel like it's funny, and we say this a lot because we moved to LA, where I feel like it is. It's like part of a New Yorker, like, I think you just complain as like a matter of fact. It's not even like even that pressed. It's more like, this is how we're going to bond.
Yeah. Like, I'm not being ungrateful. I'm just like, the weather's bad today. Okay. And like, somebody looked at me weird on a train. Like, that's what happened. That's, you know, exactly. I'm not saying that life sucks.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you in New York right now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, though, when Andy.
The pivot.
Well, I'd be trying to do a little pivot. You know, I'd just be trying to do a natural pivot. Because when Andy asked you if it was therapy speak, are you someone, like, have you gone to therapy? Are you into therapy? What's your relationship with yourself?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I have gone to therapy. I've done a lot of therapy just as, like, you know, it was something that before I got into it, I was like, I feel like at some point I'm going to need this. I don't know when. But it's something I fell in love with. Like, I like having an awareness of myself and an awareness of the things that I'm doing well and that I could be doing better at. And when things get bad and when things get dark, I love having like a bevy of tools at my disposal to, you know, actually address the problem instead of running away from it.
Right. What do you mean when you said, I'm paraphrasing you because I don't remember the exact thing, but it was something like, I'm going to need this.
Mm-hmm.
What was going on, if you don't mind me asking, that you're like, I think that's going to I think this is going to be.
Yeah.
It. Mm-hmm.
I'm going to have to call this in. I'm going to have to call this in later.
Yeah. I'm going to have to prep for this. I mean, well, the big catalyst for it was, you know, the plague that we lived through, mm-hmm. You know, just being at home, surrounded by all of, separated from all of like my usual like coping mechanisms and everything. And it was really eye opening. So it'd be like, life can be this weird. It can be this chaotic. And either I can face it head on and see like, there's stuff that I really don't like about myself. And I can just ignore that right now and hope that I'm never put in a position to have to deal with it again. Or I could like start the process of fixing it, you know?
Yeah.
Mm. What'd you confront? Because I was already in therapy. See, this is the thing. When 2020 hit, I was already in therapy. So I was just like, this confirms everything that I've been dealing with. What I'm talking about in therapy. Now on Zoom. now now in my, I gotta say, can I just, as a complete side note, I love doing Zoom therapy because I would never, I can yell in a way I would never yell with another person right there in the, I don't mean yell at my therapist, but I can be like, I do not understand the fucking world anymore. I don't understand what is happening. And I don't think I would have allowed that emotion out.
If you were physically in the space with them.
Physically in that space with my therapist.
No, I guess I've never really thought about it. Thought about Zoom therapy that way. I'm like completely different. I'd much rather prefer like an in-person thing because I feel, I don't know. I mean, I grew up acting. So part of me is like, if there's a camera in front of me, it's easier for me not to be myself.
Yeah, you know.
But I get that where you like you're not in the same room as somebody else. So like there's more space for you to be much more expressive emotionally.
I feel that same way with you. Like, it's more like, it's not that I can't be myself. It's that with that camera on, like I have to be like, hide video, hide self view. You know what I mean? Cause like, I can't look at myself. Cause I will just literally be like performing the feeling. to press upon her.
Exactly. Like I want you to understand the gravity of what I'm feeling. So if I need to embellish a little bit.
Yep.
Especially when you're able to see yourself. I this is my least favorite thing about Zoom is being able to see myself. Not even from a self-aggrandizing view of like, oh, I want to look at myself all the time. Mm-hmm. But I'm able to see like, do I look weird right now? Right. Am I making a weird choice?
Right.
You know?
Yeah. I just make sure I'm making the right facial expressions. I'm like, am I doing the right, like if so, like, cause I tend to just go to like a neutral face. And then if someone, like if I'm on a Zoom with someone and they say something serious, I just like I'm like, okay, I'm making like like I'm furrowing my brow. I'm doing the right kind of face. Mm-hmm.
Right. Like, but that's socio. You see what I'm saying? Like when you do that, you're like, what is serious face?
I understand how it sounds. I'm just saying that because of my, I'm putting all my energy towards other things. So my face just slacks to neutral.
Right.
Yeah. So I'm just double checking to make sure that I'm putting enough energy into that I'm communicating with my brows, with my eyes.
No, I get it.
Right.
Yeah, so really, I get it. Like,
well, Tyrell, that's very nice of you. Andy's trying to book his therapy session. Okay. He said, how do I book? How do I slate in a way that brings this therapy session home?
Yeah.
He said, no.
Yeah. Wait, did you get used to, okay. So we were just talking about this. We were hanging out with some friends in a park and one of our friends is an actor who's been in shows and stuff like that.
Yeah, like,
and
he's worked for a long time since he was very young, like you.
And I took out my camera just to take a picture of like everyone, and the minute my phone was out, he snapped to attention. He instinctively knew. He
Tyrell was, is nodding knowingly.
Nodding knowingly and smiling. So I'm curious, at what point, since you started acting as a child, at what point did the awareness that you're on that you like have to form your body into some way and your mind and your emotions into some way because there's a camera on you. When did it enter your consciousness?
I think it entered my consciousness around the same time it enters a lot of people's consciousness, which is like when I started high school, like freshman year of high school.
Okay.
Where I was like, up until that point, it was just like a fun thing that I did, you know, as a kid in New York. It was like an extracurricular activity, you know, where I would be like, I'd go and I'd audition and sometimes you get to go and do a cool thing and you're out of school that day and sometimes you don't. But it wasn't until like I became a teenager and started going to high school and like started going to auditions and seeing like I'm auditioning to be a freshman in high school. And there's this like 28-year-old like super athlete auditioning for the same thing. I don't look like that. And I probably won't for the next decade. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So there was an awareness of like, oh, I look a certain way. And that has a big effect on the things I can and can't do in this world. Huh. So that was like, I remember that being the time when the majority of my insecurity settled in, the majority of like the beliefs about myself and who I was and who I could be started, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have to imagine what a kind of mind fuck that is. I was able to somehow push that off into my 20s, right? Like, for whatever reason.
Which is,
like, I knew what I looked
most
like,
people but, can.
Right, right,
right.
Yeah, which, I mean, I think that's, you know, that's usually when you're able to, like, you can get help and find, like, good friends who have gone through the same thing and sort of be like, stop doing that, you know?
Yeah. But to have to confront that in your teen, like, what role am I in, the, like, in, right. both in this industry and then in this world? Like,
it is so, it's so weird. I have, both of my brothers also did the same thing. We grew up acting, and I have a lot of friends who also did the same thing. And my brothers and I have this joke whenever we talk to people, half a joke, but mostly serious, where we say, like, child acting just shouldn't exist. It's child labor, and it's bad. It does bad things to the kids who do it. Because, like, you, as an adult, you're able to separate making a decision, a good business decision that's going to help you for work, from who you are as a person outside of work, where there's a very common thing that I run into when I run into other people who started acting as a child, where you believe you are the thing you get cast as the most. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it would, for like, for me, when growing up, a big thing I had to undo, and I'm still working to undo, is I fully believed that I was incapable of being cool ever.
Huh.
Because I was a tall, lanky kid in high school. So I was a nerd all the time. I was like the uncool, funny friend, which I'm thankful for. And I love, because like, it was a bag I could get into, and I was good at doing it. But for years afterwards, I thought like, oh, that's how people see me. So that is what I am. And it wasn't till like really starting in 2020, really doing like actual hard work, being like, no, you can decide who you are and what you want to be and what you want to be seen as. You don't have to like, whatever the quickest, easiest box for you to fit in was when you were growing up, that doesn't have to be you for the rest of your life.
Well, I mean, this is what's interesting. I mean, especially again, because you grew up within it, right? Because a lot of times there can be that sense of, if you're a child actor, but then everything else is like regular kid.
You did audition for Waiting to Exhale.
Yeah, but that was like what? Oh, yes, I did have Honey in my youth, But it was, but it was like a regular, you know, it was apart from the norm, right? Like, it was different, and there wasn't anyone in my life to necessarily talk about that with. Like, it was literally like, oh, she's, as you said, this fun thing you're going to go do on the side and then see what happens.
Yeah.
But this, because this was kind of like, you know, your siblings are also doing it too. They're in the same boat as you. So you're all kind of sitting there with this sense of, how do people perceive me? And
not
how can I manipulate that perception?
Not just how do people, but I think there is something very specific, because this is an industry run by rich white people.
Well, most, but come on now, of course.
Yes.
Of course.
That there is also that additional kind of,
yeah,
kind of thing where you're like, now you get to be like white actors get to be four things. Black actors get to be one and a half things.
Yeah. Do you see why I married him, Tyrell? Do you see why I married him?
I understand. That was like a wonderfully astute observation.
Sometimes
really
I can't believe it. Sometimes I can't believe it after all these years.
I have read Bell Hooks.
Yeah, that's a good choice. I like that.
But I have to imagine, so like, good. On top of all this stuff, on top of all the normal stuff, there is also that additional lens that you have to now kind of like excavate. Who am I?
Yeah.
From out from under.
Yeah, no, it's so true. We're like, as growing up as a black kid, you are very aware of the fact that there is the you that you are, and then there's the you that other people see. And a lot of times those two things don't overlap or intersect at all. You know, we're like, you have to learn that as nice or kind or inoffensive as you can be, you will be seen as a threat in certain situations. You will be, you know, you will be seen very negatively for no reason. So going into it already primed with that information and that lived experience, it was easier to just sort of say like, oh, this is another thing that like people will see me as, and there's nothing I can do about it. And I can either use it or I can try and walk away from it.
Was the choice for acting for your family, I guess, was it something because, well, we're here in New York, this is available to us? Was it a parent's unfulfilled dream that you were now filling in?
Tyrell ain't gonna say that on the record, even if it's the truth. You think he wanna get whooped? Honey, he ain't gonna say that anyway.
See, well, this was actually it was my uncle's third attempt at breaking into the industry. But no, it was a lot simpler and a lot sweeter than that. My older brother, when he was like four, he saw Men in Black for the first time. And my older brother is actually like a strangely wise person. He always has been. So he just turned to my mom and was like, oh, I want to do that. She was like, I'm not going to let you go fight aliens in like the middle of Midtown. He was like, no, like what, like Will Smith is doing. I know that he's not doing that. I want to do that. So like he kept pressuring my mom about it long enough that she was like, okay, I'll like let you do some auditions and stuff. And I was born shortly after that. And I saw him doing it. And I was like, round two, let's go. Put me in it too. And it was the same thing with my younger brother. So it happened really kind of naturally and organically. So like our foundations in it are very wholesome. Uh-huh. And it was just sort of like growing up in it and learning how things work that, you know, you get an understanding for the fact that like this is a business. It's not built for children. It's like not built for
adults.
It's not built for adults. It's not built for anybody. It's not made to make you feel good about yourself or anything else.
But I'm wondering though, I mean, because I get that. That wholesome approach. But what kept you staying in it once you became an adult, right? Because you could have easily said, okay, I've done this, right? I'm successful. I've done the work. All right. Mm-hmm. We've done what we could do. This is kind of weird. I'm done. What makes you kind of mm-hmm. stay in it? Not just obviously, again, I understand loving the work, but given that, you know, in essence, you've had the same job your whole life.
Yeah.
So what keeps you kind of staying in?
Honestly, I think it was the therapy work that I ended up doing. Because for a while, I was questioning, like, I did this thing as a child. I did it one way. And it was great. I had some success. Why even, you know, test my luck in that sense? But I ended up realizing that I actually do love to do it. And that it's an exercise in stating and standing up for who you believe you are and how you feel about yourself. So it's, in a sense, it's an exercise in self-confidence, saying like, I know what it would be easy to see me as, but I know who I am. Mm-hmm. And I can prove that I am that thing, you know?
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. That's a nice way of looking at it, actually. That might have to change my perception.
Real something okay.
It's a cool little twist to it.
It is. You know? No, it's true. It's like
if you could have a healthier attitude towards this, I would love that. if this gave you a healthier attitude that didn't like every role did not engender months and months of anxiety and neuroses and sleeplessness. That's
the reason why I end up changing my perception on it in that way, because it felt the same way for me for so long of like, you know, getting an audition I got extremely anxious and really bitter because I was like, this is something that I know I could maybe get, but it's so far removed from anything I am or anything I want to be. But it would be good to be working, you know, it's like that whole thing, and changing my perspective on it and saying like, I have with every audition that comes in, I have an opportunity to prove to myself my own worth and who I am, like how I truly see myself, the best version of myself, and putting that on display and giving people the opportunity to accept it and agree with it or disagree, and that allowing that to reinforce it. Like when getting a no, it's like, yeah, that person doesn't see it right now, but like that doesn't mean I stop being that thing.
Right Okay, we're gonna be clipping this part out, just replaying this over and over as I'm reading the sides. Okay, reading the sides, saying this is a chance because it is. Well, because I guess what's very interesting is like what I'm taking from that too is, again, as someone who, you know, what I do think can be interesting about starting this at a young age is that you come in without a lot of the same baggage that an adult does, right? Like, for instance, when you're 7, you ain't saying, I gotta pay this bill. I gotta prove to everybody that they weren't wrong about me. Like, you know, you don't have all
exactly,
that
yeah.
on top.
Mm-hmm. You're not hoping to get in the alumni newsletter saying, right. like, you booked this part on The Good Place
exactly,
or whatever.
Exactly, exactly. So mm-hmm. it's like, so on one hand, it relieves some of that. So, right, you start off with a little bit of that purity, as you said, right? And as you said, even the way you got in was already, like, for the fun of it. But then as you do become an adult and start to feel all of that, how does that change? You know, how can you adjust yourself to kind of like, okay, well, this is why I liked it to begin with. How do I keep liking it? And by it, I mean the whole process of it. It's not just the moment where you're on stage or on in front of the camera. It's like everything leading up to it, which is way more of the actual work.
Yeah, it's a rough thing because, like, so much of acting and so little of acting is actually acting. Mm-hmm. Like, there's so much of it that is just, like, hoping for, and it can sometimes even feel like begging for the opportunity to do the thing that you love to do. So, I don't really have, like, a good succinct answer to that question. I think I'm still trying to figure that out. Like, how do you keep that grounded, stay grounded while going about this thing that isn't prioritized to make it easy for you to do it at all? Mm-hmm. You know, the stuff that has been working for me has been, you know, being in therapy and also working to reframe the way that I see my approach to it, and seeing sort of, because acting can feel extremely passive, where just mm-hmm. things are happening to you and you have to, like, be thankful whenever you get a win, but changing the perspective.
I hear acting is reacting. Is that true?
Well, yeah. Yeah. I mean, in the set sense and behind it, where it's like things are going to pop up for you and you got to react to the best of your ability. But yeah, like the seeing whenever an audition comes in, it's something, it's like, this doesn't feel like something I want to do or should do. Seeing it as an opportunity to either stand up for yourself and be like, listen, I know I'm going to sound crazy, I don't think this is the kind of thing I should be doing. Or having the opportunity to go in and to see what they want and not give it to them. That's one of my favorite things to do, actually, where, like, I've even especially growing up and being, like, in the child acting circles of, like, wanting to be, like, sort of like the nerdy best friend, like the only Black person on the cast, I would be able to see what they wanted and see how, like, wrong and bad and racist it was.
Yep.
And then I would just go, okay, underneath all of this stuff, you want somebody who's going to come in consistently and turn a joke over. I don't need to turn this joke over in the way that you have it written. I can show you that there are different ways to do it.
Mm-hmm. When, you know? I'm helping Naomi sometimes run sides. She's like, I don't know how to do this. I'm like, oh, it was written by a white person. There's a white cadence to it.
Yes.
There's a whiteness to this joke. I can tell you how to say it if you want.
I know, like, it's, like, so true. Well, because I'm a stand-up comic. So, like, I have the way I say stuff on stage. Like, I was like, so then sometimes I look at something, I'm like, oh, I know. Like, I was like, oh, this must be like, and girl, the dang, 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 dang. You know what I mean? Like, it's literally that. And I'm like,
yeah.
But then I'll be reading that, especially because I'm like, this woman is supposed to be 20 years older than me. Do you know what I mean? Like, I know exactly the Black lady they're picturing.
I know her.
She's auntie. I get it. One day I will be her. I'm just not her yet. Yeah. But I'm like, what? And it'll just
or
be
it's
funny.
A 30 Rock cadence.
Oh, right? Yeah. Like a
That's
very,
what
like,
I'm talking
dense
about. Where I'm
joke,
just like,
right.
It's dense. You got to say it fast. Like that. That's
no,
what I'm
but
talking
I'm
about.
Thinking like, about like, the sitcom stuff where I'm like, this was written by like that guy who's 72.
Oh, see, I was thinking of like white cadence. White cadence.
I see what you're saying.
Yes. Do you know what I'm saying? That's
yes,
what I say.
Two
like
different
30 Rock.
Yes, yes, yes.
I'm just like, oh, yes. You just got to say this very fast and then hit that last syllable. Right?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It doesn't matter. It almost doesn't matter what the words are, right? It's just this cadence.
Yeah. it's just like the rhythm of it is going to be funny no matter what.
Yeah. So wait, okay. I have to ask then, because the two pillars of the show, therapy and couples and relationships.
I was wondering what was going to come in.
Oh, yeah.
All times. Yes. Through this, okay, so you're the pre-2020, pre-plague, and then post getting into therapy. How did this affect your relationships? It doesn't have to be anything. Romantic, yeah,
family, friends,
family,
whatever.
Everything. Like, what was the transformation for you?
I mean, it was... I'm having to use the word transformation because it really was a transformation where I think that there is a mindset that's easy to slip into when acting, but especially when acting in LA, where you are sort of resigned to the vision of yourself. You're resigned to the version of yourself that people tell you that you are. So you kind of get deadlocked in like, well, this is who I am and these are my issues. And like, you know, there's nothing I can do about them. And maybe someone will come along who loves me for these things and that's it. And then like happily ever after. But being able to sort of reframe everything about my life and have just like, I wasn't able to be what I did. I wasn't able to be the way I treated people. I wasn't able to be what other people told me was cool or hot or fly or sexy or whatever. I had to really interrogate myself and figure out what are those things for me. So I had to start the process of like figuring that out and showing up as myself in a bunch of situations. And it's been like an ongoing like a process of learning and seeing how authenticity is really attractive to the right people and extremely unattractive to the wrong people. Like the speed at which like walking into a room will like make certain people go, I never want to interact with this person ever again. And it's scary for the first few times where you're just like, people didn't used to like turn away when I walked into a room, but that's just like, that's a good thing I'm learning. And it's like, that's you're showing up in your, you know, you're shining your light. There was a quote that I read somewhere. I can't remember where I read it from, but it was, the goal is to shine so bright that certain people have to turn away.
Mm. Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
So it's like if the sun walked into a room, like there would be certain people who would be prepared to who would appreciate that. Like, wow, the room is so much brighter now. And this person is such like a unique and interesting person. And there are some people who are just going to say, my eyes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Is there something specific that you were like, all right, pre-2020, I don't like this about myself, or I want to work on this for myself, that you did through therapy that changed how you are or acted or were? I mean, acted with other people, not in scenes.
Yeah.
Not like on the set of Party Down and Adam Scott's like.
Yeah, I mean, it affected everything, which is good. So I was able to go into Party Down in a much more prepared sense. But I think that like, I had to start getting prepared, or you have to start getting comfortable expressing myself authentically in all areas of my life. One of the things being like, I'm like a very like proud, like bisexual queer person. I still don't really know how, like I say a bunch of things, but like they all sit different for me every time I say them. So I'm still trying to figure out like the how to self-identify, and it's been like 8 years. This is like when I say like it's ongoing. But one of the things that like depressed me so much about dating was I didn't fit comfortably into any one area or community. So there are aspects of myself that were like in conflict with each other, where like I could, when I went into queer spaces, I was usually much too Black for those spaces. And I didn't want to not be that way. And I didn't want to change that about myself. But that aspect of myself didn't seem to fit. And vice versa, when I was in Black spaces, I was often too queer for those spaces. When I was like in, but like, and also like I was, and had been an actor and a professional for like much of my life. So like in a lot of like the spaces that were with people who were around my age, I couldn't relate to people because I was like, I'm like in the middle of I know what I'm doing with my life. I'm in the middle of a career. I'm not being judgmental or anything, but it's like, there's a, you know,
yeah.
That came out way more judgmental than I wanted it to.
No, we get it.
But yeah, you're a little more established in what you're doing. So it's a different, you're just like, you guys are you're not on the same
where other people
journey.
At that age are like, I don't know what's going on. I don't know who I am or where I'm going. You were like, yeah, you kind of already have this path.
You're like, I have a savings account. Okay. I have actually an accountant. And so that is a different part.
I have a loan out.
I have a loan out. Okay.
Yeah, it's like, I know how to show up and like do, you know, even when talking to a few of the friends I'd made in LA about like going in and doing interviews and applying for jobs and stuff, I would kind of be like the one person in the back of the room where I was like, I'm like, I do that like multiple times a week. So like, I don't need to like learn how, but I do feel you though, cause it's hard.
Right.
You know, we're it does suck, but like at the same time, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But the lesson I had to learn, I'm still working on learning, is that like being all the things that I am is not a weakness. It's a strength.
Yeah.
So like, just because it's not easy for me to find a place that validates all of the aspects of myself at the same time doesn't mean that there isn't a space for me in the world. And actually, it just makes you a more interesting person.
Well, that's why it's about, too, like when you talk about, because I definitely have had those feelings, not around queerness, but certainly growing up where I was like, you talk white or being too nerdy. But then at the same time, I go around white folks. Yeah. And it's like, I'm very much Black. Like, that's the thing, people, it's always so funny.
Exactly.
There's nothing that makes you realize your Blackness more than being around white people. Like, people think if you're hanging out with white folks, it's because you don't see yourself. And it's like, oh, no.
No. You know.
But then it's realizing the extent to which is like, well, I have these different groups of friends and different spaces for these different parts, right? So it's like that, and necessarily feeling like,
yeah,
I'm not my whole self as much as I'm feeding a specific thing in this space, right? Like when I'm with this friend, this is about nourishing that sector, if you will, that plot of land. Mm-hmm. And then this relationship is about nourishing that other part, you know?
And it's all important. All of those aspects are important to have and to nourish. We're like, I have a group of friends that like, it is the strangest collection of people, but we all like, we play D&D together. Mm-hmm. And cause like, listen, I do it so I can say it, D&D players are strange and that's all right. You know? That's part of it. You're playing, like, we're all coming together to play a pretend game as characters made up. But, like, it is one of the most rewarding things that I do because it validates a part of myself that, like, is an aspect of me that is real. Like, the nerdiness and, like, wanting to just show up and have a good time and be comfortable and, like, have, you know, be around good people who aren't going to judge you for doing something.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So is that a context? Because I was going to say this to both of you. Where is the context that you get to be your full self, where you're not just nourishing an aspect of yourself, where you're just like, is it when you get to play D&D, you can, I mean, obviously your full self is then
a character
through a Kender thief or something, but like, whatever, right? But is that a context where you get to fully be yourself in every facet?
I think that ultimately the goal is to get comfortable being fully yourself everywhere.
Yeah.
So you don't need to find a space where you are fully yourself. I think that I spent a long time looking for places where I could be fully myself, and it left me really upset and dejected and disappointed because I couldn't find those spaces. And I'm now working to just fully bring me and all the aspects of myself everywhere that I go.
Yeah.
Because there are, when I think about the what I like about other people, that's what I like about people is having like having a passion about something, especially if it's something I don't know and I have no context for. Or like if there's like the quickest and easiest way to my heart is to like lose yourself explaining something I will never understand to me. Where like just like I'm trying to think of an example, but like I've had experiences talking to people like that do things I can't even fathom. Like at one point I was talking to someone who worked in documentary film and like behind the scenes, like getting documentaries made. And I was like, I have no clue how any of this works. If it isn't pretend and you have the story written out already, I don't know. But they loved to do it. And they would like explain to me the ins and outs of their job. And the whole time would be like, this is so, I love seeing this side of people. Like, I love seeing this side of you. I will never do this. I will never do your job. Like even some of the heat I'm able to glean off of like this person radiating is as grandiosely as they can. Not even sure that's a word, but like, you know, like that, even that couldn't get me to do that.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But I'm still like, that's the reason I'm here.
Yeah.
You know, it's the reason I feel like that's the reason like we're all put here on Earth.
Yeah. Someone being they're sorry, I stopped myself because I was about to say universal, but I think this is pretty true. If you're not a psychopath, I think probably the most attractive trait in someone is them being passionate about something.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Enthusiasm, I think, too, right? Like, that's what's infectious. Yeah. Even if you're like, I don't want to do the thing, but I like how excited you are about the thing. Like, Andy and I, we talk about this a lot as a couple. We're like, we didn't necessarily come to, we have similar touch points to things we like, but also a lot of things we like, absolutely, like, I do not like most of Andy's music whatsoever. But he is having fun with it. And he's wearing his shirts and he's buying his posters and he's going to the show and I say bless. The idea that like, because I also feel like what I like about any relationship is this idea that you bring something new to the table. Tell me something I don't know. Right? Because it's like, that's what.
And you want to hear all about Pavement. Band you want to hear about is Pavement. You want me to tell you everything about
absolutely
their lyrics,
their
and all
B-sides
that
from 1992.
That's what you love.
But I like that. But like, you have like also just a depth of knowledge that I really appreciate. Like, I'll be like, how do you know all this stuff? And just like hold it. Not just to have it, but I'm like, you remember stuff you read?
Oh, Sue Me Jack, the B-side from Slanted and Enchanted?
Sure. It's like, why do you even like remember the thing where it's like, I couldn't even tell you what I ate yesterday. And I'm very impressed by that kind of like, just that having that information and like wanting to share that information is to me, as long as you're not condescending when you're explaining something, I'm like, I can listen.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, don't
Frasers. That's the rule.
Yeah. Don't be a Frasier. Frasers. Don't be a Frasier.
You can't be a Frasier.
We don't want that Frasier energy.
Yeah, no. Yeah, that is true. I like as much as I love Frasier. That's been me and my younger brother's thing for like the past few months. Just been binging Frasier and the Nanny.
You have? Oh my goodness.
Oh yeah. That's like, you know, that's the thing. We have that same thing of like when we find something and we like it, we kind of just get obsessed with it for a while and have to know everything. And I'm the same way about music. So like hearing you talk about Pavement, I was like, okay, but what?
Well, I mean, I could talk about it for an hour or two. I just didn't want to. I didn't want to waste our time.
I know. I know. That's the thing. I was like, I will be kind, and I won't steer this train off like completely off the cliff.
Yep.
But no, it's that thing. It's having that passion and not being condescending about it, because I feel like condescension isn't passion. It's like wanting to feel smart.
Yes, yes. That's not the same thing as being enthusiastic and into something. Just wanting to let people know you know about something. Yeah. Very different.
Yeah, because it's not you're not genuinely interested in that thing. You're interested in knowing more about something than someone else.
Yeah. Mm. You know projecting a certain,
Okay, that's projecting where you take a break. Yeah. That's where you take the break, Andy.
Okay.
Because that's the moment. That's what's going to keep staying in people's heads.
Naomi, I was there with you.
I know you were.
I was there with you.
I know you were.
So we're going to take a quick break, and when we get back, we're going to answer your advice questions.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promote for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Dear listeners, hello! Andy here again with an ad read. Wait, Andy, not Naomi, is doing this? You might be asking yourself. And I'm going to tell you why, because today I'm talking to you about Storyworth. If your parents, if your family are anything like mine, they are wonderful people. But also they are, maybe, a bit repressed. And not really forthcoming with details about their lives, their feelings. You know, they're just tight-lipped about everything except the weather or what's for dinner. And that's why I love Storyworth. Over the course of a year, every week, Storyworth emails your loved ones a thought-provoking question. Things like, what were your next-door neighbors like when you were a child? What would you change about your childhood? Did you have a favorite teacher in middle school? What made them great? Questions that could really allow you to get to know them, and in a manner that might get these folks in your life to actually open up. So they get these questions, they email back their response, you get a copy so that there's something exciting in your inbox besides 300 emails from a restaurant you went to once in 2015, yes, I'm talking about myself mostly, and then after a year, Storyworth compiles all of those stories into a beautiful keepsake hardcover book. I mean, Mother's Day is coming up, and my mom, famously difficult to shop for, but with Storyworth, I can learn something about her besides her favorite food. I mean, crab cakes, I know that, but I really didn't know much else about my mom, which is why Storyworth is ideal. And then, when she gets that hardcover book, like a tailored to her autobiography, hoo boy, gotta tell ya, parents love personalized books. It's a fact. So, give all the moms in quotes in your life a unique, heartfelt gift you'll all cherish for years. Storyworth. Right now, save $10 on your first purchase when you go to storyworth.com/couples. That's storyworth.com/couples to save $10 on your first purchase.
And we're back, honey, with Tyrell Williams here to help you handle your scandal. Tyrell done some therapy. Tyrell said, we got a plague, we got a civil rights remix, I gotta figure out myself. And now
we get questions from all over. We do. Mostly, I will say, Instagram, Gmail, couplestherapypod@gmail.com. And Naomi, what's the voicemail number? Which is our favorite?
323-524-7839. Remember, you got a 3-minute limit. Because Tyrell, they be coming up in here with a long voicemail and they don't even be getting to the question. And so I'm going to tell them again. I say, I want you to start with your pronouns and your log line. I need the top line of the question.
At the top.
Then the details.
Then get into the body. You can explain, but you got to get the thesis first.
Thank you. I need my thesis.
So here's the thing. Historically, we have been very bad at answering these promptly.
Okay. We have a backlog.
We have a backlog. by the way, listeners, thank you so much.
No, we love that you're writing in, but yes.
We eventually will get to everyone's advice. We eventually will, okay? I promise you that. If we have to put out an episode every day for a year, we will do that.
Just to get to everyone, yeah.
But, so I've been trying to lately, if something comes in, let's answer it as quickly as possible.
Okay.
Okay. And this just came in. Okay. This is from Instagram, a direct message. Naomi, do you want to read this?
Okay. Hey, Andy and Naomi, and surely incredible guest. Accurate. Longtime listener and lover of the pod. Headline for this. See, somebody doing what I asked them to do. Headline for this is, how do I tell my friend that our house will not be the party spot without sounding like an ass? Okay. Now, I am 30, she, her, and this year my boyfriend Jack bought a house. I'm very...
Not in Los Angeles, I'm assuming.
Thank you. You 30 and bought a house?
Yeah. Anyway,
I'm very proud of him, as it was always a dream of his. He did it by himself because financially I'm not in the position to be buying or co-buying houses. We do live together and have for a while. We're in the boonies now, but it's great because we're homebodies and remote workers and enjoy quiet. The issue I'm having is that my friend, I'll call him Michael, also 30, he, him. Michael and I have been friends since high school and have been varying degrees of close our whole lives.
What does that mean?
I know. Michael lives about 2 hours away with light traffic, so not close. But he recently texted me about having his birthday party at our house because, quote, your yard is bigger, end quote. I told Michael that I would run it by Jack and that the yard needs a lot of work, which is true, that we're focusing on fixing the inside of the house, which also needs work. I do want to note that Michael knows Jack bought the house on his own. But Michael has made comments in the past that kind of insinuate that I can just tell Jack what to do. Okay, so Michael's birthday's in the summer, so we might have things where we want them. So we might have things where we want them by then, but we've only been in the house for a month at this point. So we're trying to get our bearings, and we have elderly pets that hate strangers. You know what? Relatable to me. Most importantly, I think Jack doesn't want to have the party, and neither do I. It felt like Michael was being a little presumptuous.
Sorry, can I break in for a second? That's 100% presumptuous. I have never had one friend, first of all, they know not to do this in the first place, but I've never had a friend be like, hey, we're having a party at your place. This is not like a high school.
No.
Like,
no.
Movie.
No.
It's not Mean Girls. Like, we're having a party. Sorry, go on. I didn't. I just like. I'm. Just
yeah.
Like,
I want to get to the end because I have to say I'm feeling going to say the same thing. But
Jack especially hated Michael's follow up suggestion that we could just move the party inside if the yard wasn't ready. Okay,
that's we.
Thank you. No, this is insane. We both don't want to be the party house. He doesn't dislike Michael, but they've had maybe six conversations over like 8 years we've been together.
That's it?
Exactly. Well, because Michael lived far away, right? So it's like he lived far away, so it's not like they hang out with him a lot.
You've had more than six conversations with my good friends that live across the country.
But, well, my question is, how do I politely tell my friend, who currently lives at home with his parents, that our house is not open for get-togethers? Are Jack and I the rude ones in this situation?
Oh, we got our own little Am I the Asshole?
And then it says, I will say that Michael has had some issues with boundaries in the past, and I do think this wouldn't be a one-time thing. He's the type of guy that will show up to a one-on-one hangout with four or five other people in tow.
Nope.
That's just how he is.
Nope.
Since I've told him that, I had to ask Jack. He started talking about how he'll be coming down for my birthday in the spring. I have not had any kind of birthday celebration for years. Not for any sad reason, just because I hate birthday parties. I do kind of think he's just using my birthday party as an excuse, or my birthday as an excuse. I would love to see him, but he seems fixated on the party part. Any help is appreciated. Thank you. You know what? I've never seen the three of us. I've never had me, Andy, and the guests be so on the same page. Tyrell, your company, you say what you think.
Oh, my God. No. No. You, Can you remind me of her name again? Does she have a name?
No, she just said I'm a she, her.
It's anonymous?
Yep, anonymous.
Okay. Okay. Well, I'm gonna speak directly to you, ma'am. No. No. You are, all of the, you answer so many of my questions within the body of the text that he's weird about boundaries, lives far away, trying to have parties, hasn't had a conversation with your partner. What? No. This is Andy, like, the 30s and still trying to party it up, like we going to prom? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. This is a no.
Yeah.
Hard boundary, hard, fast boundary that cannot be crossed.
Yeah.
Yes. Are Jack and I the rude ones? Absolutely not.
No.
It's not. It's your house. This isn't like someone, like you had like three tasty cakes. You opened up your tasty cakes and someone reached over and grabbed one. It's not it's not a cupcake.
Yeah.
Okay.
No. This is your home.
It
is your home.
Even then.
And even then, don't take my cake.
And even then.
I'm just saying.
Yeah. But no. Mm-mm. He's trying to fill up a party bus, drive it to your home, and turn your house to Magic City. Don't let him do it.
Yep. Absolutely.
Please
not.
Do not.
Absolutely not.
In fact, just do the party bus, right? I've never
been on one. Have your party somewhere else.
I've seen them on TV. They look fine.
Have a party bus. I don't know.
It sounds fun.
Something else.
It doesn't need to go somewhere.
You can just park the bus. Or park the bus and have a good time.
Let me pitch this. McDonald's Playland. Do they still have birthday parties there? I went to one when I was a kid. Chuck E. Cheese.
And look, he invited himself to your house, so it wouldn't be hard to invite himself to a McDonald's place.
Thank you.
Just throw a bash.
Absolutely. No, this can't happen.
Was Showbiz Pizza in New York?
No, there was no Showbiz.
There was no Showbiz Pizza in New York. You guys didn't. You never went to a Showbiz Pizza.
I've never been to. I desperately want to go to a Showbiz Pizza or have gone to one, but it was just Chuck E. Cheese's. That was it. I just got the like.
Showbiz was great.
You know.
Showbiz Pizza with the Pennsylvania.
And honestly, it would be weird. I'm not going to say it wouldn't be weird to have an adult birthday party at a Showbiz.
Exist. They might not even let you have an adult birthday party at Showbiz.
Probably not. Bring a little. Okay, this is a little sad, but bring. Why don't you make a little doll of a child? Say, this is my child. We're having a birthday party.
So they think you're an adult having a psychotic break.
This is my daughter, Annette. And it's obviously just like straw. It's just straw jammed into a dress that you bought at TJ Maxx.
Yeah, they'll let you do whatever you want. Just to keep you happy. Yeah. You do that shit.
Just make sure you like have Annette like dangling from somewhere at all times.
Yeah.
Like from like one of the portholes of the like climbing stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
Tyrell gets it. He says, yes, make sure Annette's visible the entire time.
Yeah, just like visible from all areas of the showbiz.
That's where most of my birthday parties were when I was a kid, showbiz.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, because 30, I mean, you're still young. This part, Michael lives with his parents, so he can't have his own party.
Sure.
So he's trying to find a way. Mm-hmm. And I mean, especially because. Also, my biggest pet peeve, when you said Michael's a person who will bring 4 to 5 people to a one-on-one hang, there's like nothing.
That's a no.
I would never hang out with you ever again.
No, that's because you got to respect the energy of the vibe of the event.
Yes, exactly.
You know, if it's a kickback, why are there 8 people here?
No.
That were not on top of the people that were already there. Strangers as well.
Yeah, that's what it is. It's like, this is not relaxing now that I got strangers up in here.
Respect the vibe.
I got to figure out like, who these strangers are. I have to do extra work to like, is one of these people a psychopath? Is one of these people like, is there somebody like, are there a thief? If there's one person who isn't in this group for an extended period of time, where did you go in my house?
Thank you. And that's my problem with you having a party, especially because she's now saying, shoot, we live in the boonies. Because here's what's going to happen. You have a big party at your house, people going to spend the night at your house. You're going to have randoms in your house. If you live in the boonies and people have been drinking, they just going to stay. So it's not going to be one of those like, oh, just give me 3 hours. We'll be outside. That ain't how that's going to work.
Nope.
That's not how that's going to work.
Somebody's going to lose their keys.
Uh-huh.
Be like, I don't know.
No, absolutely
unless you have it at 2 p.m. Could be a 2 p.m. party.
People still be getting drunk at 2. You may not get them out the house till midnight.
But you'll get them out of the house. But I'm saying they're not
you'll
staying
get them
over.
Out eventually. But still,
they're not staying.
You will, yeah. You still got the sun out.
That's true. But no, you just have to say like you're not an ass over this. And just be like, Michael, we can't do it. We're not really, you know, we don't. And just be honest, like we don't want the responsibility of hosting people. And even if Michael says he will host, that is not true because it is your house. So like whatever he's saying, not true.
Say we don't want a bunch of people at our house.
We don't.
I'm honest about that. Like if someone wants to do something and there's a lot of people, I'm like, I don't want to do that at my place.
Like setting good strong boundaries is not a bad thing. It's never a bad thing. You don't want something that you don't want to happen in your home.
Yeah.
Yep. Full stop.
You are bowling totally
alley.
Fine.
Full stop.
You can go to a bowling alley and
thank
have a party
you.
There.
Yeah. Like a bar. Like people find a bar, go to your do your birthday party there, Michael. I'm sorry you don't have a home to have a party at, but a lot of us don't have homes to have parties at.
You could do laser tag.
Laser tag.
You could do laser tag.
If you're really trying to act up, you could, there's so many things.
Yeah, no, this isn't it. You're fine. You're not a bad friend. You're not a bad person. Michael is just out of his mind. And that's fine. Bless him. He's a friend you see once a year. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's a reason why your boyfriend has only had six conversations with him in 8 years. Because that's the kind of friend Michael is. We don't need to see Michael too much.
Yeah.
Do you have time for one more?
Yeah. Why not?
All right. Fun. This is a voicemail. Which one? This one. Okay.
Hi, Andy and Naomi and wonderful, wonderful guest. You can call me E. My pronouns are she, they. I'm a big fan of the podcast. I've been listening for years and finally had something that I was like, I really need to hear someone else's thoughts on this. So my main question is, like, how do you support or stay friends with, like, a long-time friend who, like, their decisions are bad and you don't understand what the heck they're doing, and you wonder if you should even still be friends with this person? Basically, the situation is I've had this friend since college. She's like one of my only friends from college, which was like 10 years ago. And every year she says she's going to move to New York is her dream. We live in a smaller city in the South, and she says she's going to move to New York, but then by the end of the year, she, at the last minute, decides not to go, probably because she's scared or it's different. I don't know. And this year, she really had a plan. Like, she was going to New York, like, looking at apartments and jobs and different things. But she also started dating this really awful guy. She knows he's awful. She started dating him because the sex was good. And then she, like, grew emotional attachments. And he lives, like, 2.5 hours away. So every weekend, she drives to visit him 2.5 hours away. I live in the city, and she lives, like, 45 minutes outside of the city. So then it's like I can only really see her on weekdays, which is hard because it's a long drive and there's traffic.
We found out this guy was Michael.
And Michael. When I do see her, she's like, oh, I've been such a bad friend, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, well, I don't know. And anyways, so this year she seemed really serious about the plan. And then she was literally moving out of her apartment, packing up boxes of things, and at the last minute she decided not to do it again. It just kind of feels like the last time, like this is her giving up on that. But at the same time, I was excited for a moment because she had talked about, like, well, I could actually move to the city and see you more and blah blah blah. But I just found out she's getting an apartment in the same area that she's in. She's probably gonna just keep dating this guy and keep doing these same things and just, like, moving backwards. And I don't really understand, and I don't really know if I have a part in this, so what should I do?
This is a sad situation.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
We're all in our minds right now are picturing that friend of ours that is.
Yeah, exactly, where you're like,
oh, gosh.
I mean... Do you want to start?
No,
we always let our guests start first.
Well, I guess I would say you cannot ever make anyone do anything. Your friend is making choices, and that is just up to her. If she wants to move to New York at some point, she may do that. She may not.
Yeah.
She's choosing to not do that. If this isn't the way that you want to be living, you can't make a life out of trying to fix someone else's life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, that is the word. That is the truth. That is the moment.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, and it really, really does suck, especially if this is like a friend that you had for a really long time, or since college, like you said. But
yeah.
I hate
to be this person, and I hate to say this because every time I see it, it makes me cackle. But sometimes it's really true. You might got to just focus on yourself on this one. You might have to. You know,
it does hurt Tyrell to say that. You guys, he's really like, I don't.
All of
know.
Us, it's true. I mean, we've all had a friend who you are invested in, and you're invested in them getting their shit together, mm-hmm. and they're not for whatever reason,
right?
Yeah,
and it's just like at some point you have to disinvest yourself and just be like, all right, they're doing their thing,
yeah,
and that is or isn't going to make them happy, but you can't.
Well, speaking of is or isn't going to make them happy, because that's what I wonder too. Because there's a couple things that my follow up or what I would ask you, E, to kind of talk about is, now is she coming to you complaining about her situation all the time and still doing the same shit? Or is she out here just having a good time and you looking at her like, girl, what? Because that's two different things.
Right. You see them, they purport to want to do a thing, and that they purport to want this as their dream or whatever, right? But they're not actually following through. Are they not actually following through because they are stuck in some way? Or are they not following through because they're fine at the very least? We may be not happy necessarily, but fine.
But I do. Yes.
So if they are fine where they are dating this, dating Michael, driving 2.5 hours.
The Michael who's trying to have parties at other people's houses.
Driving 2.5 hours to fuck Michael and then come back home or whatever, right? And it's fine. And it's not like, it's not what you would want to eat. It's not what you would want to do. Necessarily,
right. It's not for you.
Life. Yeah, it's not that kind of thing. But maybe they're okay with, or maybe it does make them happy.
Right.
I don't know.
In which case, okay, y'all got different priorities. But now, if she coming to you complaining all the time about her situation,
that's different.
And not doing nothing, you gonna have to say, I can't talk to you about this. Like, I think that is like where you have the space to go. As someone who cares about you and who has had this conversation with you a lot, it is very hard to continue to hear you not make changes to your situation. I think, and that's what you said, like a friend you have over 10 years where it's like, I don't want to see you like this. So it's like, I think that's something you can say, but if it's more like, oh, I don't really agree. And now, you know, when it comes to like getting together, hanging out, and it's like weekdays, because my big problem too is like, she's driving. It says she drives to see this guy 2 hours. Meaning this guy ain't driving to her. Meaning, this friend of yours is doing the work to maintain this situation with a person that you're saying she says isn't even great. So this is where it kind of is like, you know, I think
there's no one closer than 2.5 hours.
Eddie.
Is
that bad out there?
It's real. Listen, getting a place to live that is close to anyone you know is rough right now. Getting the places is hard in general. But I will say that, like, there are ways to make things happen. And also, like, this is, after a certain point of time, there's the saying that, like, you are a reflection of the company you keep. Mm-hmm. This friend is doing things that you don't like to see them doing. Part of being a good friend is being real and sort of being like, you've expressed that you want to move. You've expressed that you don't like this person. I'm just highlighting for you that you are not moving and you are staying with this person. Mm-hmm. The things you say you didn't want to do. Mm-hmm. I'm just letting you know that that's what you're doing. And also, like, what kind of person do you want to be? Do you want to be the kind of person that does things or the kind of person that talks about doing things?
Oof. That's a real conversation.
That's a question for you and not for your friend. Because, again, you can't control what your friend is doing.
Yeah.
But you can have that real conversation with them.
Yes. If you feel like it matters enough to you, if you haven't already tried it, I think you owe it to the friendship and to this person to at least give it a go. If you have and they ain't hearing you, then yeah, you wash your hands of it. Like, that's all you, if you're like, I really, it's like, I don't want to hear this. This is like really, and like, I feel this kind of person too, because there's a lot of chaos here. The idea that you would be moving boxes and then in the moment decide you're not leaving, that's chaos. Okay, that's chaos.
Yeah.
That's someone who's lost a deposit. That is scrambling. That is a storage
or
space.
Or didn't have it in the first place.
Or didn't have it in the first place. Yes. But I mean, it's like,
oh, I'm moving to New York. Oh, that's great.
And then
yeah.
And there are a lot of reasons why I understand how doing stuff like that is scary and like it's not easy, but it's like you have to like work on what makes you one so attached to the story and not to the action, or what makes you so afraid if you really want it. And either one of those is like that person has to work on that. And like, what I mean is that a chaotic person like this, it might be easy to just kind of fall off. I'm not saying ignore them entirely, but this is one of those friendships that really might be like a check-in text every few months and leave it at that.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I can't leave Albany.
She's Albany. Like, I have to leave Albany. And then I have to drive to Syracuse for this dick. It's like, what are we doing?
It's like, so what are you? What? So what's the point? What's the goal?
What's the goal?
Yeah.
I hear Syracuse dick is gorgeous. Is that true?
No, it's not.
I have not heard the same. No, I have not heard the same thing. I have not. I don't know where you heard that from.
It's not a t-shirt. It's not a bootleg t-shirt. There was a Black Bart Simpson on it for some reason.
A Black Bart Simpson. Love a knockoff Bart Simpson.
I love a Supreme hoodie Bart Simpson with like knotless braids and the link up.
Oh my God, Tyrell. Thank you so much for joining us in the pod today.
Thank you for having me. This was great. This was a lot of fun.
You're the best. You guys are the best for listening, and we'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye.